This Earth Day 2015, we take a look at a vexing problem facing Baltimore every day. Trash. From alleyways and storm drains to the Inner Harbor, litter seems to be everywhere. What can be done to make Baltimore cleaner? How do you get people to stop dumping furniture and carpets in the back stretches of the city? How do you get them to use trash cans and not sidewalks? We're going to hear some ideas this hour, including details of a new citywide effort. We'll also get an Earth Day report on the Waterfront Partnership's solar-powered Inner Harbor water wheel. And we'll tell you how you can get your hands dirty, or not if you wear gloves, this Saturday along the Jones Falls, getting serious about city trash on midday after the news. And welcome back to Midday, everybody. It's our second hour. Thanks for sticking around. Dan Roderick's here. On Monday, after hours of heavy rainfall overnight, the Inner Harbor water wheel, that's that solar-powered contraption that removes trash from the waterfront, collected a record 19 tons of stuff, of trash, of litter. That's enough to fill 6.5 dumpsters. The debris flows, you know how it goes, mostly out of storm drains all over the city down to the harbor, and we see it there. But the water wheel's been doing a great job. It's been on the job for the last year. We're going to hear about it in this hour of the show. Overall, trash is a perpetual problem in good old Charm City, on the streets, in the alleyways, and in the streams leading to the harbor and eventually the Chesapeake Bay. A total of 200 tons of trash is expected to have been collected by that fancy water wheel trolling in the Inner Harbor when the device hits its first anniversary. I believe that's next month. Today is Earth Day. It's Earth Day 2015, so we're going to talk trash on midday in this hour, and here's some ideas on how to curb the problem. We'd like to hear your ideas. I invite calls in this hour of the show. We've talked about trash before. I know a lot of you have opinions about what should be done. 410-662-8780. Some of you are completely pessimistic that nothing can be done, but we'd like to hear from you in this hour of the show today. It's Earth Day. What are your ideas for curbing trash in Baltimore, changing people's habits about all of this? Our midday email address is midday@wypr.org. I mention that because I know a lot of you like to write in comments that I'll read on the air. We have a few guests on the show today at the forefront of the effort to curb trash in Baltimore. Adam Lindquist is with us, manager of the Healthy Harbor Initiative of the Waterfront Partnership. And they're the ones that run the water wheel. Oh, maybe the water wheel runs itself nowadays. Adam, nice to have you on the show with us.
Good afternoon, Dan.
And Cheryl Cassani is with us. She just served on the Baltimore Commission on Sustainability's Waste Work Group. Is that what it was called, Cheryl?
Yeah, that's what we called it.
All right, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
The idea was to come up with some ideas.
Yes.
For dealing with trash citywide. So we're going to hear from you in just a minute. But first, let's go to the water wheel, because it's fun to talk about that, Adam. I gave a few numbers there, but talk about how the water wheel operates. For people who haven't seen it, can you just describe it a little bit?
Sure. It's a really incredible and unique-looking device. I urge people to kind of check it out online if they get a chance, if they can't come down to the Inner Harbor to see it. But what it uses, what it does is it stays in one location at the end of the Jones Falls, and it uses the current of the river and solar power to turn a giant 14-foot water wheel. And that wheel turns a conveyor belt system that pulls trash out of the river. So trash, during a rainstorm especially, flows into our storm drains, down to our streams, and comes out into the Jones Falls, where it's funneled to the front of this device.
I use the word troll. It doesn't troll.
It does not.
So it stays in one place.
Correct.
So where I've seen it is where it stays.
Yep.
Okay. Now, and I said 200 million. How do you even measure that? Is there
We have to weigh the trash? Right.
Or?
We have to dispose of the trash at a facility, and so that facility sends us bills each month, and they keep track of the weight.
The water wheel went into operation about a year ago?
Correct. We'll be celebrating its one-year anniversary on May 5th.
Would you just take a moment and tell people how it's funded and what the Waterfront Partnership is?
Sure. The Waterfront Partnership is a business improvement district. We're located around the Inner Harbor. We take care of all of the cleaning and greening services. We also operate a number of family-friendly parks and different festivals down at the waterfront. And beyond that, we have this great environmental initiative where we aim to make the Inner Harbor swimmable and fishable by the year 2020.
And who funded the Waterfront Partnership then funded the water wheel, right?
We were lucky enough to raise the money for the water wheel. It cost about $800,000 from two sources, the Maryland Port Administration and Constellation, the sustainable arm of BGE.
And where's all the trash go?
After we pick up the trash, it is taken to the Bresco facility where it is incinerated to generate electricity for Maryland homes.
410-662-8780. I mean, I'm glad the water wheel is there, but it is depressing.
Absolutely.
The water wheel is exciting. It's solar powered. It's cool.
Right.
But when you see that much trash.
Yeah, it really has inspired a lot of people. It's great that, you know, our goal is really to clean up Baltimore neighborhoods and put the water wheel out of business. But we have this 2020 goal, so we need to do something right away that would make a substantial impact on the amount of trash we saw in the harbor, which is why we built the water wheel.
How common are plastic bags?
We've collected over 40,000 plastic bags with the water wheel.
Oh, so you actually count them? Don't go into the big weight. I just wondered generally how common they were, but
we do have a method for estimating the loading of our dumpsters. We've collected over 4 million cigarette butts and 97,000 plastic bottles.
You know, it's astounding. Especially revealing in the spring, Cheryl Cassani, I'll go to you here because we have to get into some new ideas for changing people's habits. It just amazes me on some streets in Baltimore. Some streets look great. I must say, the city does a great job on certain corridors of sucking up all this trash that's out there. And then you go to certain neighborhoods, certain streets, especially in the spring. Something about the spring. The wind is blowing, the winds of March, the snow is gone, and you see plastic bags in trees. It's more common. I guess it's more visible this time of year than other times of year, I think. And it's depressing. So what do we do about it, Cheryl? Tell us about it. First of all, Cheryl Cassani, she works for the Baltimore Community Foundation. You are on assignment with the Baltimore Commission on Sustainability's work group on trash and waste in Baltimore.
Yes, I've been a member of the Sustainability Commission since it formed, and this is such a persistent, visible problem that we formed a waste work group about a year ago. And, you know, listening to Adam talk and you talk about the trash in the spring, we've learned that the city spends over $23 million a year of taxpayer money just cleaning up after improperly disposed of trash, meaning just pitched in the streets. So, I mean, we should think about the fact that they're not having the opportunity to just pick up our trash cans on a weekly basis and pick up our recycling bins. So I think it's worth knowing that we're already paying for this mess.
$23 million, and that's just what the crews can get to, right?
This is with one thing we learned, we tried to take a fresh look at this really old problem. So we stepped back, we went into neighborhoods and held our meetings in communities, in community centers, schools, church basements, and just talked, I don't want to say we were naive, but tried to just step back a little bit and hear from people. And what's remarkable, truly remarkable, is how much energy and passion there is to continue working on this problem and how much strong leadership there is inside DPW. It's just, you know, we can't blame them. There's only but so much they can do. When people are throwing, would you say, 93,000 cigarette butts?
Oh, no, 4 million cigarette
4 million
butts.
Cigarette butts. I mean, what do you want this DPW to do? So the things that we heard, there is a consensus that there needs to be more education and outreach. I mean, no matter where you go, people say we need more information. We need it on a more regular basis. We do have commitment from both DPW and the mayor's office. We're going to put together what we're calling a peer-to-peer network, not just a constituent complaint hotline, but a way for the citizens who have regular ideas on the ground to be in a constant ongoing partnership with DPW to co-design some solutions and to actually influence some of the practices that DPW has. And DPW is going to devote a full-time person to working on that. But there's also some policies that, you know, we feel like it is time for us, in conjunction with the education and outreach in the neighborhood work with the department, it is time to take a serious look at
plastic bags?
A bag bill.
For instance, okay.
Just for instance, yeah. A statewide bottle deposit bill. I mean, these are things that have been tried and actually figured out in other places and have been figured out in ways that are not detrimental to low-income communities, which is one thing you hear a lot. You have to couple that with a way to make available free reusable bags. We start talking to local businesses. They're like, we're in. Can we put our logo on it?
Yeah. I don't get that. I hear this every time we talk about the plastic bag ban, that it'll hurt low-income people because they can't afford a 99-cent reusable bag. Well, okay. All right. I'm not going to dismiss that, but let's find a solution.
Well, right. So first of all, people are already paying for the cost of the bag because the business has to buy the plastic bags anyway. So that those aren't free to a business. Neither are the paper ones. But if we really wanted to solve that, let's just solve it.
Yeah, okay, that's one. And bottle deposit, how many plastic bottles did you say were?
We're up to 97,000 so far.
97,000 this year?
Since the water wheel went into business.
Yeah. All right, so all those plastic bottles, if you had a deposit bill in Maryland that passed, the legislature said, okay, you can put a nickel deposit on all bottles, what would happen to them? Cheryl Cassani, for people who aren't familiar with how this works in other states.
I've lived in states where they've had it, and it's been on cans and glass bottles, I believe.
Right.
Those things are eliminated from the waste stream immediately. It's like you turn on off the switch one night, you go to bed, you wake up the next morning, they're gone. Because this is another thing we heard from people. People are thinking bigger thoughts out there than we're giving them credit for. People talk to us about reducing use, not just recycling, but actually reducing what we use and extracting the wealth from waste. There's a lot of value in the waste stream. And the glass bottles is a classic example. But we've, for reasons that are not clear to me, we've resisted that in this state. It's already figured out. We can do this.
You know, you talked about education. I guess that means just getting the word out in a sustained way. This is what I think has been missing. So I grew up with public service announcements all the time about litter and trash. Don't be a litter bug. I go back to Lady Bird Johnson's effort to make the highways clean across America and the famous television advertisement of the Native American crying at the sight of a trash dump on a landfill someplace or just trash everywhere. So I go back to that. And then that seemed to disappear till the 1980s in Baltimore, early 80s, late 70s. William Donald Schaefer, the mayor of Baltimore, and a series of television advertisements, commercials for trash ball.
Trash ball.
Trash ball. You know, it was catchy. It showed Schaefer and other people balling up trash and throwing it in trash cans all around the city. It was a sustained effort, a reminder to people, this is your city, don't trash it. And then it seemed to go away. So, I don't hear it anymore. I don't see billboards. I don't hear it on radio. I don't see it on television. And I think it's missing because I don't know what happened. We assume that people understand you're not supposed to trash, but that it doesn't work that way.
No, there's two things. One, we want to have a new media campaign that's not with traditional media. This generation, you need to reach people through social media. We've been doing some work with kids in schools who, with very limited resources from us, have at the Community Foundation, have created any number of videos, some of them very edgy and creative, that would reach their peers. Hmm. And we would like to have a more systematic way to give avenues for them for their creative stuff. We also learned the city's pilot municipal trash can, they've been piloting it in Bel Air Edison area and in Mondawmin area. We're gathering the data, this DPW, we want to expand that, but we want to see what the data says. What we learned is that they didn't just go out and hand out these cans. They accompanied that with extensive education and outreach, sort of really getting everybody on board, not just with the new can, but also with what are the days, what are your responsibilities, what do you do with bulk trash? Just a kind of a ongoing reminder to people of what the rules are.
The municipal can, meaning a can that's
issued
sort
by
of
the
standard
city,
can that's given to people?
Standard can issued issued to each household, coded for the household. So when it's somehow walks away from your household, you can track it. and they are piloting this in two neighborhoods. One of the things that we heard, the thing we heard loudest from our conversations this past year was how much people, other neighborhoods, would like to be part of that. DPW is actively looking at how they can expand that program. They've been committed to looking at 1 year's worth of data. We think that's awesome, but we're ready to say, let's expand it.
Cheryl Cassani, who worked on the Baltimore Commission on Sustainability's waste work group.
We had to call it something.
All right, coming up with new ideas for how to stem trash in Baltimore City, curtail trash. Adam Lindquist is manager of the Healthy Harbor Initiative of the Waterfront Partnership. We have to take a short break. We'll come back. We have some other guests who will be joining us toward the end of the show to talk about trash. But please give us a ring, 410-662-8780, with your observations or ideas about trash in Baltimore. We'll be right back and go to the phone lines. Coming up a little bit later on in this hour, Christopher Burnett, a community activist from West Baltimore, who's been very busy in the Edmondson Village area and has headed up cleanup efforts over there. He'll be joining us. And Claudia Diamond is going to be here to talk about a cleanup this weekend, a Saturday, in the Mill Corridor along the Jones Falls that you can take part in. And also some other ideas they have about that green, getting greener corridor of Baltimore City that does get trashed because people dump stuff down there in the Jones Falls. We'll be talking about that in a little bit. Let's go to the phone lines to take some calls from our listeners here. We'll start with Wayne in Hollandtown. Wayne, you're on Midday. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Dan. Your suggestion about public service announcements, I think, is terrific. Perhaps some high-profile athletes could be enlisted to give some of these announcements, but mm-hmm. That's not really what I want to talk about. Just based on observations that I've made of these huge mechanical sweeping machines, especially
the street sweepers, you mean?
Yeah, the street sweepers. for example, Conkling Street in Highlandtown between Eastern Avenue and Route 40. Just take that as an example. These trucks, they go down. People pile up trash on the sidewalks. Nothing is done about that. They just stay in their trucks. Moreover, they ride right by the storm drains where all the trash collects. And, I just don't see, what the purpose of these huge trucks are. I think money would be better spent. There must be tremendously expensive to maintain these things. And, perhaps more effective would be to actually put people on the ground to go around and keep people in line with respect to their trash.
Wayne, thank you for the call. Cheryl, did you hear about this while you were doing your listening to people? Did you hear any comments about the effectiveness of street sweepers?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting observation. One of the things we do know is that the street sweepers are keeping a lot of stuff out of the storm drains. So I think it begs another question. The street sweepers aren't really the people cleaning the streets and cleaning out the storm drains. So it is worth taking a look at how they couple the street sweeping with regular cleaning of the streets.
Yeah, we track the amount of trash and litter being collected by the street sweepers in the city, along with the water wheel and the skimmer boats in the harbor. And we've seen a really large uptick in the amount of trash being collected since the city expanded to citywide street sweeping.
Yeah, I think I referenced that in my column, that it actually had increased the amount of trash they're picking up. I think they expanded the fleet of street sweepers, too.
It's citywide now, but his point is well taken, and this is one of the ideas behind a peer network. How do you coordinate all this stuff so it doesn't look like one thing comes by and it's still dirty?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of not the
point. So his point being, when they go by the storm drain itself, maybe that's not the best use of a street sweeper?
Well,
some of it gets into the storm drain anyway? Is that what
yes. I mean, it's not, you can't get everything off the street. But the business about having it go by and having there still be trash on the corner, it's two separate services. Do they need to look at how those things are combined?
Let's go to Jason in West Baltimore for his comment. Jason, welcome to Midday.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I was just going to make the comment. I do a lot of work in West Baltimore, and I see a lot of times people are putting trash in garbage cans and places that the city or people designate as areas to put trash. But a lot of times I find those trash cans are overflowing, trash is blowing everywhere. And I just feel that sometimes in certain neighborhoods in the city, certain quality of life things aren't really taken care of. And for me, I think trash cans and really telling people that these are designated areas to place trash, I think sometimes the city services of emptying those and really making sure that they're kept clean and up to date, I think is something that the city doesn't do that great of a job doing.
Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Another great point. The city services on a frequent basis the corner cans in the gateways, the sort of the main streets. But this is another thing we heard over and over from citizens. One of the things that another idea that we want to do is we want to make sure that there's a trash can at every bus stop. That's not one of the things we do right now.
We don't do it. I've heard this complaint that in places where you do it, people bring their household trash, and like Jason says, these street trash cans overflow. The state parks of Maryland eliminated trash cans several years ago, and they're cleaner than they were then. People take their trash with them. I don't know if that would work in Baltimore City. If you didn't have cans at all on the street, you think it would go the other way. You think it would be worse.
It cuts both ways. People do use them for household trash, but then you have to look a little closer. Education and awareness, do people know that? And are the people that are doing that, the buildings in which they live, are they being given proper trash disposal options?
Right. That's Cheryl Cassani from the Baltimore Community Foundation, who headed. Did you head the commission?
I chair the commission, but the waste work group was co-chaired by Dana Cooper from the Department of Public Works, an excellent, excellent leader, and Fran Flanagan, who's been doing a lot of work on water issues in the city and state for years.
And also with us, Adam Lindquist, manager of the Healthy Harbor Initiative that runs the water wheel down at the harbor that was put there by the Waterfront Partnership. Kim writes to us by email, wants to do a shout-out here to Irene Smith. Starting last January, Irene Smith, community volunteer, has cleaned 1,552 bags of trash in less than a mile section of Herring Run at Harford and Argonne. That equaled 9,000 pounds of litter, metal, furniture, tires, etc. She has involved schools and other volunteers. There isn't a government agency responsible for cleaning the streams directly. We all need to get out and pick up trash there. There's just too much entering the streams through the storm drains and too much litter. We certainly agree with that. This is Betsy calling us from Baltimore City here on the southwest side. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, what did you want to tell us?
Well, three things. I think it would be really good to bring back the Hokie men because they can get to a lot of places that the little machines that have the vacuum thing,
right,
they can't get to, and they don't get out of the car. And plus, I don't know, I think maybe it would supply some jobs for people, unskilled labor. But the other thing was that Texas had a very successful trash program called Don't Mess with Texas. I think it was back in the 70s, and apparently it was very successful, but a lot of it was public service. And there used to be public service announcements all the time when I was growing up. Don't be a litter bug. Give a hoot. Don't pollute. And I just think the message needs to get out there more so that, you know, people will have that feeling of guilt when they throw trash on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But you just don't see that in this day and age.
Yeah.
You don't see it on television.
Yeah.
You don't see billboards. And it might be good to look into what Texas did. It was a lot. The one commercial I remember was a kid with his father went to a stream. You know, his father was drinking beer. This was back when they could do that on commercials. And he was going to throw his beer can in the stream, and the son was like, "Dad." And the father looked at the son, looked at his beer can, and put it back in the back of his truck. But it was kind of like peer pressure, the guilt of it.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway,
thank you.
It would be good.
Thank you, Betsy.
I've been picking up trash in Baltimore City for like 30 years.
Well, thank you for doing that. And I'm glad she mentioned the Hokey Man. Did anyone in your survey mention the Hokey Man?
No, I think we see some of that in the benefit districts. One of the problems right now is we're dealing with the trash on such a scale that it's hard to do that at scale. But it's worth looking at because there are some places where maybe we're not in a one-size-fits-all situation, and we probably need to look at that too because it would be a way to provide jobs.
Those were men employed by the city who went around with trash cans and brooms and picked up trash and shovels. Karen writes in to say, how about an experiment in Baltimore City with litter and people? The mayor announces that there is, say, $50,000 in a fund to be used to award to people who are seen picking up litter. If you happen to be seen, not sure who the witnesses would be, you might get $5, you might get $100 or more, a reward, basically, to reward people for that kind of behavior. After a while, folks might get into the habit of picking up trash, even if they don't get paid for it. Just a thought. Well, I kind of like that. It's
like
not
that.
A bad thought.
I like that.
Not a bad thought.
Caught doing something good.
Elvia says, listeners need to be reminded that cigarette butts are litter too, toxic litter. They don't biodegrade, and they absorb other toxins as well. My organization, Annapolis Green, is starting a campaign of behavior change about cigarette butts this summer. We are calling it Scuttlebutt. They have a grant from Keep America Beautiful. There is still such an organization, part of the federal government. Keep America Beautiful, and working with the Alliance for the Chesapeake, will provide establishments like bars with butt receptacles and give away pocket ashtrays to smokers, anything to keep the butts off the ground where they eventually end up in the water. It's a public health issue. I was standing at an intersection in Baltimore City, and there was a lot of traffic after an Orioles game, and a guy in a Mustang, very nice car, rolled down his window, threw out a cigarette butt right at my feet, and I started yelling at him, and he yelled back at me, and thankfully the light changed and he had to drive off.
People don't think that cigarette butts or chewing gum are litter.
Yeah.
And cigarette butts can be recycled. We actually are starting a program down at the Inner Harbor where we will have receptacles that collect cigarettes, and we actually send them to a company that recycles them, and they pay us for the cigarette butts.
You're talking about peer pressure. Someone mentioned peer pressure or child-parent pressure. What about interpersonal communication on trash? It's tempting to say to somebody when you see them do that, to say something, but you kind of chicken out. That particular moment, I knew the guy had to drive off, so I was feeling a little braver. But, you might get into something if you do that with people you see trashing.
We've talked to kids about this, which I think we should do a lot more of that. Students have a lot of ideas, and they have some very creative ways of how they talk to people who litter.
Oh, I'd like to hear that. In fact, I'd like to hear that from our listeners today. Maybe you've had that experience. 410-662-8780. John in Baltimore County calling the Midday Show. Go right ahead, John. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a few ideas. I'll try to be succinct. First, about bulk trash, my experience is it's kind of a hassle, honestly, to arrange for bulk trash pickup. And if you made that easier for people, they might be more cooperative with it. And moving on to littering, I'm a little bit cynical about education. I think the people who really need to stop littering they don't care. They don't pay any attention to advertising and stuff like that. So that's the kind of person that doesn't care. They're not going to care if they see an advertisement. Hmm. But what I do think would actually work is if you had a fleet of officers who were charged with enforcing the laws that are already on the books. And I think there's some very strict fines for littering. Isn't it like $200 or something? And what you could do for people who really can't afford that is you give them the $200 ticket, and you have a system in place where people know that, hey, you go to court, then they're going to reduce it to $25 and 10 hours of community service. You know what the community service is. You go out on one of those crews picking up trash.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John. Cheryl, can you speak to that a little bit? We do have fines in the city. There is some enforcement of litter dumping, I know, in at vacant houses or in alleyways. But, gee, there seems to be a need for more.
He's right. All the education ideas won't reach everybody, but we still need it because we're not reminded enough, and there are enough people who don't know. We got an earful on enforcement, including enforcing the current laws and increasing the fines. This is something we want to, one of our ideas is to really spend some time with the Environmental Control Board, who's very interested in getting more involved, that people in housing and community development and DPW, who are all have some enforcement role, and community people have a lot of ideas on how to improve that process, including...
And streamline it.
And streamline it.
Yeah.
So he's right. We got an earful on that, and there's definitely a willingness on the city agencies to streamline that process. He's right.
Let's take. Did you want to say something, Adam?
Well, certainly, certainly, we recognize that that an anti-littering campaign isn't going to be the silver bullet that solves the problem. But I think it's all about government kind of setting an example for, you know, creating a culture of higher expectations for the cleanliness of our city and mm-hmm. how you should dispose of your trash.
Thank you. We'll take another call here from Mount Vernon. Regina is the caller on Midday. Hi.
Yes, I was down in D.C. a couple of weeks ago, and I noticed in their storm drains that they had, it looked like a rug in front of the storm drain, and I was sure that it was acting as a filter. So I was wondering if anyone on the panel knew that.
It wasn't a rug somebody tossed there. It looked like it was meant to be there, huh,
oh,
Regina?
Oh, definitely. It was wrapped up purposely.
Are you familiar with that?
I mean, it sounds like it might have been something for sediment control to keep sediment. So oftentimes if there's a construction site kind of up the street, they will be required to put sediment controls into storm drains to keep the dirt out of the streams.
And she's, I don't know of that particular rug-like control, but we do know that Baltimore City, the part of Public Works that's working on water is starting to install storm drain inlet screens as a way to keep the trash from flowing down the storm drains. And that's part of what our stormwater fee is helping with.
Interesting. Regina, thanks for that call. Tony in Baltimore, you're up next. Thanks for calling the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. This is a topic that I'm glad everybody's talking about. I'm glad that the city or city agencies are focusing on this. I live on Linwood Avenue, northeast of Patterson Park. And I walk out my door and I find that people just throw the trash from within their car next to where they parked the night before. And I go out and pick it up just about every day. So I like all these ideas, but I think however we get the message through, there needs to be a cultural change so that people know this is not acceptable behavior. I don't know where they learned that.
Hey, Tony, maybe you write a little note, leave it under the windshield? What do you think?
Well, you asked if anybody ever called anybody out, and
yeah.
I have.
Yeah.
When I see it, I go, hey, and then they look at me, and I say, I believe you left something here, and they look at me in disbelief, and a couple times I thought I was going to get shot, but I actually had one man say, you know what, you're right, I'm so sorry. Other times they just grab it, and I've had people walk away. So I think, you know, I'm active, I talk to people, I call them out on it, but I think there's some cultural thing. I'm not from here. So I don't know where these people that live in the city didn't learn the opposite, that this is acceptable behavior. I think if you eliminate that basic everyday behavior, it'll solve, 80% of the problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I roll my eyes, I shake my head like everybody else. Lynn writes in to say, constant flow of trash at the corner of Cold Spring and Roland. Homeowners usually pick it up. We as walkers also pick it up, but why on earth do people think it's okay to throw trash out of their car window?
And if you've ever lived in any other city, I'm not talking small town, I'm talking city, you know that this is a solvable problem. There is something here that somehow people got it in their bloodstream that they think it's acceptable in Baltimore, and it's not. It's not. And people, like that's another thing we heard, it's not okay. People are disgusted by the fact that we can't get this right.
I don't know what to do. I mean, it's tempting to speak up,
You have to speak up.
Well, yeah, but that's, like Tony says, a couple of times it's a little shaky, and I'm not sure I would do it. Actually, the other day near the bus stop, I was tempted to say something. I didn't say it.
I did it the other day. I talked to a young kid who dropped a wrapper right next to a trash can, and I said, did you really want to do that? It's bad for the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
He turned around at me like a deer in the headlights.
But see, I would say that. I would say that to a kid, a guy, 25 and older, 20 and older. I'm not sure. I don't know.
One thing to remember, though.
A stranger.
We've got all these big changes we have to make. We have to make a cultural change. We do have to remember that behaviors by individual people, whether they're Tony talking to somebody or whether you can go to the Pratt Library tonight, for example, part of the Green Week program, the Sustainable Speaker Series, and you can learn about what one woman did in a country in Africa to solve this problem there around plastic bags.
Is that the plastic bag lady?
It's the plastic bag lady.
She took plastic bags and turned them into purses or bags or something?
So it when you start to think that you can't make a difference, the Baltimore Green Works does a great job in showing us changes that we can make. So if you're not doing anything tonight at 6:30, go to the Pratt and be inspired.
Cheryl Cassani, who headed up the Baltimore Commission on Sustainability's Waste Work Group, looking for ideas for cleaning up trash in the city, and Adam Lindquist, manager of the Healthy Harbor Initiative of the Waterfront Partnership, which runs the Water Wheel, which you can see doing its thing at the end of the Jones Falls as it empties into the harbor.
Yeah, and right? If you're interested, if you have a Twitter account, you can follow it on Twitter at Mr. Trash Wheel.
Mr. Trash Wheel, he's pretty funny too, Mr. Trash Wheel.
That's great. Thanks.
Thank you both for being here. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, Christopher Burnett will be joining us to talk about picking up trash in Edmondson Village. And Claudia Diamond has some really good ideas about the Mill Corridor along the Jones Falls in Baltimore City. Where do you hear this? And please keep phoning in with your ideas. We'll get to your phone calls. 410-662-8780. Welcome back to our Earth Day special on trash in Baltimore. Alex, writing to us by email, says, a lot of different celebrities and singers appeared in those Don't Mess with Texas commercials in the 1980s. The one with ZZ Top is particularly memorable, but I can't find it on YouTube. I can call in and sing it for you if you like. No, that's okay, Alex, but keep looking for the thing on YouTube, and maybe we can tweet it out a little bit. Had ZZ Top doing that. Yeah, that's what we need here. Get Joan Jett, get John Waters, get... you know, people involved in anti-trash campaign in Baltimore City, huh? Old Buck Showalter. Get old Buck Showalter talk about trash around Camden Yards. Anyway, Cheryl Cassani is with us from the Baltimore Commission on Sustainability. And so I'm glad you stay with us, Cheryl, by the way, because
thanks.
We probably have some more calls coming in with questions that you can answer. And I want to say hello to Christopher Burnett. Chris Burnett, I met him last year out at Edmondson Village, where he's been very active out there working on trying to spruce up Edmondson Village and also do something about the trash around that area. So, Chris, nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Claudia Diamond is with us, too. Claudia is here today to tell us about an event coming up this weekend. It's Friends of the Mill Corridor. Claudia, nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you, Dan.
When we say the Mill Corridor in Baltimore, we're talking about the Jones Falls, and there used to be a lot of mills there that used the Jones Falls for power.
Yeah, specifically, we're talking about that part of Old Falls Road that starts from Maryland Avenue and runs down towards Union Avenue. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's a place of where the historic mills used to be. And as you know, it used to be a pass-through, and it's now become a destination, and that's how I got involved.
Yeah, there's more homeowners in the area. The industry's gone away.
Yeah, we've had some visionary developers who have realized that it's a place that people can actually live, and we're seeing that through Mill One, David DeFaro's project. Sam Himmelrich, of course, has been down with Clipper Mill, and then Thibault Mannequin at Union Mill. And that's really, so people are no longer passing through it. They're actually living there, working, and playing.
So there's this nice waterway.
That's right.
There's this stream called the Jones Falls that goes all the way down to the harbor. And there's trees, and there's actually birds and heron. And
there's
also trash,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Lots of trash.
Yes. It's a gem. As I say, we need to polish it up. It is... I discovered it a few years ago. I've lived here 20 years. I'm from Texas, a transplant, and I used to drive through it as a way to get home quickly. And about 5 or 6 years ago, I was running through the area, and I stopped and looked at these vistas, and in part, it was just mind-blowing. Here in the middle of the city was an area that, for all intents and purposes, looked abandoned and neglected. This was before there started being a lot of development, and it made me angry. Honestly, and I sort of turned to people and said, you know, why isn't the city cleaning this up? And suddenly it became a conversation of, well, why aren't we cleaning it up? I am fortunate to live in a neighborhood that has some trash problems, but not to the extent of other parts in the city. And there were groups of folks who said, let's get together and work on this part of the city. And that's really how our organization came to be.
It's as if people saw it as a big ditch, and let's throw stuff in the ditch.
And we still deal with that quite some bit.
So this weekend, actually Saturday, for 3 hours, you're having a cleanup there, right?
That's right. So in connection with the Mayor's Cleanup Day, which is this Saturday, April 25th, we are spearheading our annual cleanup. This is the third cleanup that we've done. And we're partnering this year with Blue Water Baltimore to get into the stream, the Alliance for the Bay, and then the Friends of the Mill Corridor. And, you know, talking about what Cheryl and your other guest talked about,
Adam Lindquist,
I can't talk to the innovative solutions particularly, but here's what I can tell you. We're trying to change the conversation. This is Baltimore's backyard rather than an abandoned, neglected area. And by doing that, we're creating a perception, we hope, that shows that we care about this area. And, in turn, I can tell you, I mean, we still have dumping and we have trash problems there, but things are getting better. And that's in part because we're showing our city that we do care about it.
I want to go to Christopher Burnett, and I'll come back to you, Claudia, because there's one other thing I want to talk about with regard to the Mill Corridor. So, Chris, how are things going in Edmondson Village in terms of the spruce up there? The last time I talked to you, there was still a lot of dumping going on out behind Edmondson Village.
Yeah, so a lot of our work is centered at the Edmondson Village Shopping Center. And it's a little bit different because it's a commercial property. So while, you know, we do get the street sweeping along Edmondson Avenue and in our neighborhoods, it's a little bit different when you're talking about a private property, a commercial property, where they don't necessarily have to do the things that we're asking. And so we have had a long-term fight with the owner to, you know, not just have a single guy clean the entire place by hand, basically, but to get mechanical street sweeping. So we've seen that. That's actually been progress. That's been over the last couple of weeks.
So the parking lot, the shopping center itself is cleaner?
It's cleaner. And there's still a lot of work to be done. We do have an issue with dumping and also working with the businesses there to make sure that they're securing their dumpsters properly so things aren't rummaged, and the staff making sure that they are disposing of the trash properly as well and that they're having timely pickup. Because a lot of folks, you know, it's a residential area right there. So we've talked to people who live right behind it, right next to it, and they are constantly having to pick up trash and debris that blows out of the shopping center into our community.
What do you think would be effective in getting people to wake up a little bit to the fact that they're trashing their own neighborhoods?
It's a tough thing. I think you have to lead by example. And so on March 28th, we did our last big cleanup, and we were out there with our giant trash bags. We had 17 of them filled just on one side of the shopping center and a few areas behind it. And so still plenty of work to be done. But I think when people saw us out there, you know, we heard some comments saying, man, look at these guys taking the lead on that. And we noticed that people were actually being a little bit more cognizant about putting the trash in the cans. But like I said, our it is part of the issue. The other part is enforcement on commercial properties. I mean, we know that once you see dumping happening at whether it's a commercial property or a vacant house, that attracts more dumping and more trash.
And you got to call it in.
Yeah,
I think it starts with a 311 call.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone lines. A lot of folks have called in. We got about 7-8 minutes left in the show, so we'll try to get in some calls. And I got to come back to Claudia because I want to ask you something about Mill Corridor again. Nicole in Baltimore. Please be brief. Go right ahead, Nicole.
I just wanted to address the issue of approaching people who are littering. I think that if you approach them in a respectful way instead of a condescending or an angry sort of way, they're more receptive to you providing feedback that they shouldn't be littering. That's worked very well in our neighborhood.
Okay. I had a moment with a guy threw the cigarette out at me. But I agree. I can try a more respectful approach next time when I see that. Sir, please don't throw a cigarette butts. It's Baltimore City. This is your city, too.
Right.
And then he'll say, I live in Glen Burnie, and then he'll take off. Okay. But thank you, Nicole. You're right. Thank you. Roy in Baltimore. Go right ahead, Roy.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling in with a similar story. I was walking down East Baltimore on Monday and passed a young kid who just kind of dropped his bag of chips when he was finished with it. And I wasn't even thinking, and I just kind of picked it up and handed it back to him. I was like, oh, you know, you dropped this. and kept walking, and he turned around and he said, thanks, you know, and he just kind of walked down and put it in the trash can. And, you know, it felt like, I don't know, people are worrying about lots of different things in their life and just kind of telling them what you think without judgment is important, kind of echoing Nicole's call. So, and I was on your show about 4 years ago on Earth Day, so good checking in. Thanks.
Thank you, Roy. Nice hearing from you. Ben and Frederick called in to speak about a bottle deposit, which I've advocated in Maryland. I wrote that in my column. Cheryl Cassani's here throwing up her hand saying, why can't we get it? Ben, go right ahead. Hi.
Hey, how are you? I grew up in Rochester, New York, and I know during the mid to late 70s, New York State implemented a, you know, container bill or a bottle bill, whatever you want to call it. And I got to tell you, the transformation was dramatic, and it was very quick. Really made a huge, huge difference. I don't know what kind of trash the city's facing, but really made a big difference up there. And I can take any time myself here. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you very much. You drive to the shopping center. When you go to do your shopping on Saturday, you bring your bottles and cans. You put them in a machine. They give you money. It's like one of those Coinstar things.
It's like everything else. It would take some coordination and figuring out, and you'd have to work with the store owners. It's been figured out in other places. This is doable, and this is one that has to be statewide. If you look at those laws, you don't see a Rochester deposit bill or a New Haven deposit. Maine, right. It's Maine, it's New York. Right. This is solvable. It has been solved.
Jenny Morgan from Baltimore Greenworks writes in to say, this Saturday at Middle Branch Park on the Patapsco for Comcast Cares Day, 9 to 1 with lunch and a T-shirt. Trash coming down the Patapsco and Gwynns Falls contribute to this problem, so you can go out there and help out with that. And Jenny, I'll try to post some information for you. About that. And Claudia, your event is Saturday,
it's
9 to noon, right?
9 to noon. If you go on Facebook, we have a Facebook page called Friends of the Mill Corridor, and you can find out information about it from that. And we're meeting at Clipper in Falls Row. We got a big dumpster. We want to fill it up. We want to put the trash can down at the harbor on a diet.
All right. Now, let me ask you this. New York City's High Line.
Yes.
New York City's High Line is that used to be a railroad bed,
yes,
right?
Yes, it did.
And it's green and people take walks on it.
That was my inspiration, Dan. I'm an avid runner, and about 4 years ago, a group of us were running through and we're looking around, and you've got the abandoned railroad cars there from Baltimore Streetcar Museum. You have the Salt Domes.
You're talking about the Old Falls Road.
The Old Falls Road from Maryland Avenue to Union. And you have the Jones Falls on the left, and then you've got industry on the right and the historic mills. And you just look and you say, in addition to this wonderful natural environment, we have the perfect foundation for public art. And in connection with that, Dan, we've been partnering a little bit with, not a little bit, actually a lot, with various organizations that want to work in that area. We have a grant now with MICA and Station North to do some planning in that area.
I like this thinking. I like what you're thinking. A nice greenway right through Baltimore.
That's
right. Through the heart of Baltimore. And Christopher Burnett, now, since you did your last trash pickup there, you said in late March. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you getting more people involved in Edmondson Village?
Absolutely. A lot of people, like I said, it creates momentum. So we're going to get one going next month. We weren't able to pull one together for the mayor's cleanup in coordination with that. But like I said, we're shifting the narrative. I was just at a community meeting last night in Hunting Ridge, and that was a big issue there, the large community assembly about trash at the shopping center and what can we do. And so we actually, there's a committee coming together, inter-neighborhood committee, that's going to focus solely on that. And part of it's service, but part of it's advocacy, because as much as we want to see our residents get out and do that, again, in our instance, it's commercial space. So part of it's responsibility of the property owners who's making money on our community. So they should also be good neighbors. And that's been our big push.
Jane on email says, to get people to not litter, you need to hit them early in life, especially since the airwaves are no longer required to put out public service messages. But you have to get the message out to kids early. Thank you very much for that, Jane. I wish I had time to read all these comments. On the Friday show, I think I have some time. I can read some more of these emails on trash. Boy, people have a lot of thoughts and feelings about this. Cheryl Cassani, thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for your work on this for the city. And Claudia Diamond from Friends of Mill Corridor, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Christopher Burnett from the West Side and Edmondson Village, thank you for your contribution. And good luck with your next project.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I'm sorry I didn't get to all the calls and all our emails, but as I said, I'll try to pick up on these on midday Friday. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you see some trash out there and you got a moment, reach down, pick it up. If it's recyclable, recycle it. If not, put it in the trash. Have a great Earth Day. See you soon.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Michael Himowitz, Melody Simmons, and Connor Graham. Our interns are Alexis Kuhn, Aaron Morenzi, and Mary Troutman. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.